You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I'm the Angry Indian, and welcome back. This is the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, and you can find us at ang-newswire.blogspot.com. There's a new book out there that's going to rankle some eyebrows. At least it should. At the very least, I hope it starts a conversation. What I'm talking about is the Coontown Killing Cable. Bill Campbell, we've bumped into each other on, you know, in the social networks, on the internets. Thank God for Al Gore. You know, he's out there and he's got this thing, and the video to it is a mother. And after I saw it, my first inclination, of course, being a journalist, is I have to speak to this guy. So, Bill Campbell, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you're from D.C., D.C. area, you know, so you're right in the heart of what's happening. What's going on with the black community in D.C. right now?
We're being dispersed. Gentrification's just gone haywire here, so basically, I moved here about 10 years ago, and a large portion of the black neighborhoods that were there then are not here now. And so you have a lot of black folks moving to the suburbs, and suburban black folks who moved out of the city back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s are moving even farther out. So, yeah, we're in a bit of flux.
All right, so, you know, now that that's happened, I mean, how do you feel about this, living under a black president in the nation's capital?
Well, you know, I mean, the gentrification thing's been going on for, my God, about 10, 15 years, and I don't know, I don't know what Obama has to do with it, because, I mean, it's sort of like you just sort of see neighborhoods where all of a sudden, like, a crack house is worth $500,000, and, you know, people just move it. So, I mean, this has happened all across the country. It's happening to, like, everybody. So, yeah, I've never even actually linked the two. I apologize. Because, like, when I lived in Atlanta, back in the 90s, I was living in this little city neighborhood where it was, like, a bunch of old hippies had been living there since, like, the 50s and 60s. And they were being pushed out by, you know, a bunch of the yuppie white folks. And so that was like my first taste of gentrification there. So, yeah, I've just been seeing all kinds of weird things going on just all across, you know, all different spectrums. It's just, I don't know, the whole gentrification thing has just been weird to me.
Yeah, I understand completely. I mean, the reason I asked is, you know, like most, as we were prepping for this, most communities respect some representation from, you know, someone who basically comes from their community. You know, as I mentioned to you earlier, I've been bumping into, you know, white people who are asking me, why doesn't Obama say something about police brutality? Why doesn't he say something about gentrification and the housing crisis, because it affected black people so strongly? Why hasn't he really talked strongly about Katrina? Why hasn't he talked about the segregation of schools, you know, in racial terms, the further segregation in housing, segregation in terms of healthcare, which is something that no one really talks about in terms of African people who receive the worst. Native and African people in the United States receive the worst healthcare.
I mean,
is there some sort of expectation from the people you know in the African community in D.C. who, are right in the center of this, right in the heart of it, who had some sort of expectation that this particular individual would represent America, of course, because African people have never, in any way, shape, or form, have ever suggested that other people, you know, somehow be cut off from services that only we would have. But there would be some expectation, when we've been ignored for so many generations here, that there would be some acknowledgement and some serious and honest acknowledgement about what the hell is really happening.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna have to plead ignorance on this one, because, as I said before, D.C. is such a company town. you know, that people, like, DC's problems in particular have so much more to do with Congress than the president, that's where our complaints are, for the most part. Because Congress rules DC. You know, because DC is an autonomous.
Uh-huh.
So the president has no say, really, on what goes on in D.C. proper. It's all about Congress. So, you know, some racist congressman from the backwoods of South Dakota can, like, overturn D.C. laws. So, like, that's more where our beefs usually come from. And then just over recent years, we've just had so many problems with, like, Michelle Rhee, and then this new mayor that's come in has just, I mean, the man is just... Every time we turn around, there's a new corruption charge going on. So that's mainly where people look here. Because we are actually directly affected by the federal government. And we are directly affected by the Congress.
Well, see, all the more reason. One of the reasons why I think that question throws a lot of people off is because they feel that I'm talking about he can turn over a law, that he can make a signing statement and make some sort of a change. No, I'm talking about, you know, leadership, community leadership. If Joe Lieberman had become vice president with Gore, who I just made the joke about because of the nonsense that conservatives started about him and the internet, if he had become, the Jewish community in this country, especially the Zionist lobby, would expect him to speak to their concerns. And, right. You know, I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what is it, being that, you know, D.C. is a black town?
It's rapidly becoming, In fact, in the last 15 years, it's gone from 80% to 53%
of
the
time.
In about another 10 years, it won't be black.
Okay, so I stand corrected, which makes the question even more relevant. I mean, we have these sorts of things, and like you and I were talking earlier, that there are cities... And, you know, I'm from Philly and you're from, you know, Pittsburgh, where parents are actually, shipping their kids out, you know, shipping right. Their sons away because of police brutality. And we have a black president who hasn't said anything of any, you know, measure, anything other than calling white people. I mean, when he went to the Urban League or the Black Congressional Caucus or whoever, the NAACP, whoever it was he spoke to. He basically told them that they were lazy, but he didn't say this to the Spanish-speaking community. He didn't say this to the Jewish community. He hasn't said this to the Native community. I know that for sure. He hasn't said this to any other ethnic group here in the United States. You know, but he has come and done what every other politician, you know, white politicians have done for centuries, which is basically to blame us for our social, condition. And, having said that, Coontown killing caper. I mean, you know, let's get into this. With everything,
okay.
With everything that we brought up, you know, how does your book affect? And I want to tell everybody that he had been thinking about this for years. But this past Thanksgiving, he pretty much sat down and put his nose to the grindstone and put it out. So obviously a lot of hardened thought and observations went into this. So, you know, rolling up everything we've been talking about, how does all of this relate to your new book?
Obama doesn't really appear in it. I mentioned him a couple times, the guy in the White House. But basically, alright, I've written two other novels before then. My first one was this crazy science fiction book that's very experimental, has its own language, it's very much about military... imperialism, just all kinds of, you know, actually, you probably like it. Race, imperialism, capitalism, all this stuff. It's science fiction. Right? It's just crazy. I mess with time and all this other stuff. So, my goodness, about 8 years ago, I decided to self-publish. Then, because it became a book that only a literature professor would love, I just decided to do just a little cute little pop book because I was mainly a science fiction writer and I'd never written about real life or anything like that. So I just wrote this cute little book called My Booty Novel. It was about the science fiction writer writing his second novel and everybody telling him to write a booty novel. And meanwhile, he just got dumped by his fiance. So he had to go out and date. It's all set in a blog. So, you know, I just wanted to write, like, you know, a cute little innocuous book to, you know, try to get an agent. And I did. I got an agent, and he's a fairly successful guy, but he couldn't sell the book to the publisher. And you know, he didn't say it, but somebody else who was in publishing was just like, you know, Bill, you're just not get it. And I'm like, well, you know, my dad's from Kingston, Jamaica. You know, my mom's from this small mining town in Pennsylvania that's so small it doesn't even have a stoplight. You know, so I grew up in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, and, you know, I'm just like, yeah, I have, you know, mad love for folks in the ghetto, and, you know, I respect them, and I've worked in the ghetto, I've worked in, you know, in inner city schools and all this other stuff, but yeah, I mean, I'm not, and I don't want to disrespect those people by coming out with some kind of, you know, foolishness about, you know, banging or whatever, you know, moving weight, because, I mean, that's not my existence, and I can't write about it well. Like, if I could write about it well, I would do it, but I'm not in that life.
You're not Donald Goins. You're not Donald Goins, Iceberg Slim, you know, you're
right,
Bill Campbell.
I mean, I'm not in that life. I mean, the drug dealers I knew were like suburban drug dealers, or, you know, kids like moving little baggies of weed, you know, I mean, I'm not, I mean, I don't, you know, I never lived colored, you know, I mean, I couldn't write that. But I was just like, you know, what the hell is he talking about? You know, I'm not ghetto. I mean, what does that matter? You know, I mean, ever since I was 9, I spent trying to write. I've been trying to write about black folks. So what does that have to do with the ghetto? So anyway, but this was about, this was just like when Zane was really taking off and the whole ghetto lit thing was taking off. So I wasn't really aware of that because that was sort of like the tail end of all those Terry McMillan ripoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't realize that the publishing industry just shifted. So like this little black love story that I wrote, a middle class black love story that I wrote, you know, about, you know, real people who, you know, teach and who are musicians and, you know, have jobs and stuff. Like that just wasn't happening because, you know, it was all about, you know, this whole ghetto thing. So, you know, I turn around and I'm like, I have nothing to write. You know, and soon after that, I heard this report, like 80% of what publishers publish today by, for, and about African Americans is ghetto lit, right? Which is fine and dandy, except that only 30% of the African American community lives in majority minority neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
right? So this is like this huge, disproportionate misrepresentation of black existence. You know, because, I mean, through gentrification and, you know, different waves of black flight and stuff, I mean, the ghetto is not disappearing because it will reform. but right now, I mean, it's not something that comes close to, it's not something that comes close to representing what a lot of us are going through. And then I was looking at, you know, like, popular hip-hop, not like the hip-hop that you can find underground, whether positive, negative, whatever, but like the popular stuff. I mean, it's all focusing on this, you know, moving weight and killing niggas and, you know, fucking bitches and just all this other stuff, you know, which is fine and dandy if you live that life, but then when you look at the statistics, you know, it's like 5% of the black male population, less than 5% of the black male population is in prison. Which is still a lot, but who determines a population by what's going on in 5% of it? You know what I mean?
Well, just out of curiosity, where are you getting that stat?
Oh, this was a different Justice Department stats. The population thing was the census, the 2010 census. There are a bunch of different crime stats out there that I looked into about these things.
Well, yeah, because
I mean, there's like 18 million black men, African American males in this country, and 846,000 are in jail. Right now. Now, that's not including parole, but in jail, local, state, federal. There's 846,000, which is a lot of brothers, but out of 18 million, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but see, all of that rep though has a long shadow because, you know, no matter what a lot of us do, and the more, you know, black you are, the darker you are, you know, the more ethnic you look, the more it seems as if the Aboriginal has walked into the room and people get their backs up tight.
This is my point. This is sort of my point. That's the point of the book, right? So you look at all these. You can look at all these different stats and all these different representations. You know, it's like I was talking about in the essay that I wrote about affirmative action. Now everybody always talks about affirmative action and blah blah blah. And, you know, they assume like black people, you know, are these huge recipients of affirmative action. But yeah, I just read this one academic study that the largest beneficiaries historically of affirmative action has been white women.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Now there's this huge affirmative action thing going on with boys, because boys aren't scoring as well as girls, and they keep things 50-50. You know, they're letting boys sneak in with inferior grades. And if you're a rural white boy, you have like a 43% better chance of getting into college than like a suburban white boy ever would. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, you're rural, you're in like a really public school, so if you get test scores to go to college, I mean, they want you.
Well, yeah, well, they're rural, but it's also who lives in these rural areas. You know, because when I've gone through doing work in rural areas, and like you said, you know, very few people, African people, are actually in, you know, super segregated neighborhoods. You know, a lot of young whites have actually moved into these areas. For a combination of reasons, you know, some hipness, because they're not really saving any money by doing this.
And Not now.
You know, because a lot of the people I started befriending that were white were moving in where I was living, you know, the various areas I was living. And a lot of them did it because it was and I'm being very serious, it was the end thing to go back to their office and say, yeah, I live in this badass crime-ridden neighborhood that you could never get the police to come and clean out beforehand. But now all of a sudden they're coming and then they're actually busting people who are sitting on their own stoop. You know, if they're black, anyway. So, you know, there's all of this. And, you know, actually, I want you to hold that thought. We're going to take a break. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're sitting with author Bill Campbell out of D.C., author of Coontown Killing Caper. You can check it out with coontown.com with a K. And you can also check out his podcast that I've been digging here for the past few weeks at billcampbell.podomatic.com. This is The Angry Indian. Please stay tuned.
Hello, this is Maurice Muhammad, Minister of Information with Black Unity, and you can always find us at www.blackunity.name.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio for smart aboriginals.
Pues aquí de mano la aventura Radio Bemba, toda la familia ahí que estamos en Europa, estamos ahí con Alto Arizona y con vosotros a muerte para todo lo que sea.
Mi vida va prohibida.
Radio Bemba, mano chao, fuerza con vosotros siempre.
Solo voy con.
This is Immortal Technique. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war in which tens of thousands of civilians were killed. We are told to look upon these deaths as an exaggeration or an acceptable loss in the war on terror. But this administration has lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, and produced phony news reports. People have been imprisoned without charges and tortured, and illegal weapons used. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor for an investigation. Peace.
Go ahead, ready?
I'm Forrest Whitaker for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and this is my daughter, True.
Hi.
Life is full of choices. And many years ago, I chose to become a vegetarian. And it's one of the best choices I've ever made. And since True's dad was a vegetarian, she decided to be vegetarian too. You may decide to go vegetarian for better health, for a better environment, or you could be like True and I and just decide you don't want to eat meat anymore.
I love
animals, and I love being a vegetarian.
I'm Forrest Whitaker.
And I'm Drew Whitaker.
And we're vegetarians.
For more information, visit PETA.org.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African-American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year? Whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African-American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this the piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck. It's What's for Demagogue.
Nothing British is a campaign against racism and extremism. Add your voice by signing our petition at www.nothingbritish.com.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, healthcare, including reproductive health, was women's business and respected as such. Reclaim your healthcare choices by keeping yourself informed and sharing information with your relatives. Inform yourself about Plan B, known as the morning after pill. Plan B will protect you from becoming pregnant after a sexual assault or unprotected sex if taken within 72 hours. Make sure your local Indian Health Service facility carries Plan B. It does not require a prescription and should be provided upon request. It's your right. For more information, call your local healthcare facility. This message is brought to you by Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
We the ask on the children for get up, get into it, get involved. All hundred children, when I have to come down here to the Gullah Geechee Nation, and so glad that hundred to tune in to we Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio Station. Hundred children know this year the head from the body of this year nation and the heart of we station. Queen Quest, come on children, get involved, get involved, get involved. Sign up this year month in March. Yeah, Black History don't answer. We just got March 1st to kind in. Got plenty of things with a grind on you with the Gullah Geechee Nation. Hunter Chillin' go join me down in Congo Square for the Congo Square Jazz and Heritage Festival and the Grind Back Conference. March 23rd through March 25th this year, yeah, yeah. Ah, but the weekend right after that, we kind back home for Get Hunter Chillin' Involved. And this year, Tunis Campbell Celebration. From March the 30th to April 1st. Honey, ain't nobody gonna have a email you, LLGEECO@AOL.com to the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition, the sponsor of this year radio station. Honey, chillin', this year the We Show, Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio. Come on, y'all.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
Hey, what do you think about this idea? Since we freed the slaves in 1865, don't you think the black race owes the white race reparations? I was thinking like $20,000, you know, per person. I mean, anybody that's not on welfare.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Hey, y'all. Have you heard the dope-ass soundtrack, Coontown Killing Caper by Triple Threat, to my dope-ass novel, Coontown Killing Caper by Bill Campbell? Well, here it is in its entirety. Enjoy your dope asses.
Next stop, Coontown. Doors closing.
Welcome to Coontown. Crack baby, gangster fetus. Killers with millimeters. Drop a bulletproof Prius.
Coontown. Wound to the tombstone. Books for cash. Look, ma, I'm a goon now.
Welcome to Coontown.
You are listening to the angry and alien intelligent aboriginal radio. Coontown. Drop a lot of gas and derivatives.
This is the Angry Indian. Welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're speaking with Bill Campbell, the author of Coontown Killing Caper. He's writing about what he's observing in D.C. and pretty much what's happening with the African community, not just in his particular vicinity, but what's been happening across the board. It's another way to look at things. He does hit me with some stats that I hadn't heard before. And we all need to really look at this and take all of this information and collate it so that we can see where the hell we really are here. And one of the things that we were getting into was the normalization of, austerity. Is that the new code word, Bill, austerity?
What I was talking about before was, these different stats that we have. There's like these very weird kind of subterranean stats that pop up in the news very briefly, like in, page 32 of your local newspaper or whatever, and it's just like, a little column. So as I was saying before, you have this weird, this weird perception because of the mass media about the ghetto, as people call it, and just teeming with black folks, and then you find out that basically, black folks are twice as likely to not live in a majority minority neighborhood than actually live in. And then you look at affirmative action and, blacks are so far behind educationally. But there are studies that have shown that if you break it up by class, everybody, no matter their race, was pretty much the same, on average. So, middle class, upper middle class, upper class blacks scored just the same as their white counterparts. And this goes across the race. Middle class, or, whatever. And poor kids, no matter what your race, just score poorly. And then you have, very interesting crime statistics where you find that basically white people and black people commit the same amount of crimes. And black people, win the violent crime, hands down. But they just don't prosecute white folks.
Mm-hmm.
They don't send them to jail. So, when I was looking with that book, was just like, well, we have all these negative impressions and all these negative stereotypes, or things that are supposed to be keeping it real, right? Like that gangster rapper, which I hate the term or whatever, but that gangster who's talking about the drug dealing and the pushing and the guns and all that stuff, he's supposed to be representing the reality. But then when you look to see that, less than 5% of black men are actually in prison, then you're like, whose reality is it? So that's what I wanted to do with the book. I wanted to take these things because I realized that, yes, there are people who live this life and it's sad and it's tragic. And if you live that life and you're performing arts that is based on that life, then I give you props for doing that. But a lot of these people aren't. And the corporations who are, spoon feeding us our culture, they're not trying to hear other people and what they have to say. They just decide that this is black reality. Just like back in 1850, they decided that these Irish balladeers who put burnt forth on their faces and thick red, whatever that was, on their faces and started, putting a backbeat to their Irish ballads, they thought that this was reality. Like, if you read about, the minstrel show, people went to see it, white people went to see it because they thought that was real.
Yeah.
They thought they were getting a genuine black experience. Just like if you're listening to some drug dealing rapper, people are thinking that they're getting the real experience. So then, yeah, I took like the last, all these different stereotypes from the last 20 years, I put them in a town called Toontown, which, I mean, most people should pretty much know the history of that. And I wrote a murder mystery about it, you know, it was like all the rappers in Toontown are dying, and vampire crack babies are the ones everybody sings committing the crime.
Sounds like a deep, deep Night Stalker episode with some meaning.
Well, I mean, you know, you were talking before about Bamboozled, and it's in a lot of ways it's like that. I mean, it's sort of like, I kind of describe it as sort of like the Boondocks meeting the Family Guy, because I say some stuff in there that you just cannot say. Can't say it. Period. Like, you're not going to see it on TV. You can't even put it in the movie. I mean, this is like an NC-17 book. You know? Because I just wanted to, I was like, when you listen to those guys and what they say about us, what they're saying about us, I have to write that down. Because when you hear it, you know, you got a nice beat to it, you're not even thinking about it. You know? You're just singing along, you're dancing, whatever. You know? You're just like, you're not even thinking about it. It's just entering your head. But if I put it in black and white, all of a sudden, you're just like, huh, this is really, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but like we were talking as we were coming in, I have a hard time believing that, or accepting the argument, which again, and I'll repeat, you know, seems to me to be more of an excuse, because we can get up off our asses for, as a community, for things that really don't matter. And then the issues that you're bringing up in your book, in, you know, the allegory,
yes,
it's art, but it still deals with something, you know. And what I'm talking about is, and I know my listeners have heard this before because I've harped on it, but I'm going to say it again because I have a good guess, is that when the false rumor started about Oprah Winfrey handing out free fried chicken.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
yeah, you know, I mean,
I which, remember that one. Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, we didn't bring fried chicken to America. The Scots-Irish did, you know, but it's associated with us. And yeah. it was a nonsensical rumor. And people actually were demanding. They were taking petitions up. There was a little bit of a movement that lost steam because it wasn't based on anything. But there was a movement building to demand her to honor this this rumor that she would hand out fried chicken boxes to the first 100 people who arrived at these restaurants. And I asked folks at the time, I said, why do you care about this? And they're like, well, if she really said that, then she should stand by her word. I said to this person, I said, you know, there are politicians, black politicians, people from our community that have made promises. And I'm not talking about, you know, like nonsensical promises. I mean, just, you know, we're going to ask you to deal with police brutality. We're going to deal with discrimination in housing, discrimination in employment, discrimination in education, you know, this, that, and the other. How come you never get this hype to address them not standing on their word? And I was told to shut up.
Well, you know, I mean, I kind of look at it sort of like, you know, like I blogged for a while, and then the thing that kind of got to me was, there's just like a hell of a lot of righteous indignation on the internet,
mm-hmm.
right? But you don't see them out. You know what I mean? Like, people get all upset. I mean, it's sort of, you know, people get all upset and angry over this stuff, but they don't get so angry. They don't get angry about the things that take work. You know, it's sort of like, okay, Oprah needs to stand by her word. You know, give me some fried chicken. Because, you know, I mean, she is right by it. Because that's easy. You can get angry with her. That's easy. Because what does it change? What does it matter? All you were was righteously indignant. So, okay. You know, you got to show that you were angry about it. But when you're talking about, you know, getting angry with politicians, I mean, that's work. Like, at the least, you're going to have to, like, you know, become informed and vote against it. But, I mean, if you're talking about, like, real reform, I mean, that's people having to, like, get up, get educated, speak for themselves, march for themselves, and try to change. And I think that most people, I mean, just don't have it.
Well, that may be true, but, again, you know, one of the reasons why, and I don't have hope, I don't believe in hope. I think that's nonsense. But I'm just sitting around watching what people will get up and down for and what they won't. You know, I saw guys busting their ass to get their work done early so that they could see the Super Bowl. You know, they don't have a stake in the team. And, you know, they sat and watched that racist anti-Chinese ad. Which, by the way, you know, it turns out that the woman, the Chinese woman in the anti-China ad, anti-Democrat ad that was played during the Super Bowl, was from UCLA. She's Chinese-American. Which, you know, leads into a lot of what you bring up in Coontown Killing Caper, because here it is, we have an Asian who was part of a project that racially insulted all Asians, Chinese in particular.
Hey, you know, in the book, there's a character called Licky Licky Nice Guy. And her song is Me So Lonely. So, you know, maybe she's a woman who's the effect
guy. Yeah, hey, I'm glad you went there. There's a lot of Asians that I've spoken to that would be glad you went there. You know, I'm glad. So, you know, thanks for talking to us. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to speak to us. And how can people get a copy of your book?
You can go to coontown.com. I mean, it's on Amazon in the Kindle store for now, and Smashwords. And then the actual physical book will be available, I think, on Friday at the politicsandprose.com. But right now, it's at Smashwords.com and it's at Amazon.com.
All right, and where can people see the video?
If you go to Coontown, that's with a K, Coontown.com, there's a bunch of soundtrack. I mean, there's the original soundtrack that you can download for free. There was a bunch of rappers.
Yeah, I played the soundtrack for a couple of people and they were like, "Where's he going with this?" Say when you need to read the book, man.
You need to read the book when you. But they did a great job on it. I love that.
Yeah, I thought it complimented, you know, the information I read on it, because I also haven't gotten to it yet. You know, I'm still doing what I'm doing. But look, thanks, bruh. Thank you for being here. Thanks for taking the time to write this, and for, you know, bringing these issues to discussion, because it's not going to happen unless one of us decides to actually stand up and say something.
Yeah, I mean, I just figured that people have been complaining about this for a while, but nobody's really been listening, so I thought that, you know, sometimes art does make a difference, and humor can make a difference, and that if you actually just point out how ridiculous some of these things are to people, maybe at least it would get people to think about it. Not to just take all these things back. Because a lot of people, when I tell them this stuff, they look at me like, you know, I just landed from Mars. And I'm just like, no, actually, there's lots of black folks out there who really, and it's not even just old folks who just, you know, cycled out of the target audience. I mean, who are just really kind of upset with, I mean, it's like, as I was telling a friend of mine, you realize that African Americans in their 20s, cannot remember a time when their culture did not refer to them as niggas.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, when you think about that, it's just like, whoa, because, you know, I mean, I grew up, I mean, I integrated to school in the late 70s, you know, so that was the one, those are fighting. You know, so, I mean, I was taught to not think of myself that way. And my culture didn't refer to me like that either. So, like, that's something that I relied on. You know, when you're telling me all this stuff, I look back and I'm like, well, you know, here's Miles Davis, here's Coltrane, you know, here's Brown, here's all this stuff, here's Run DMC, you know.
Yeah, and they didn't they didn't use that, you know, they didn't even go there.
You know,
yeah.
So, I mean, what are you talking about? But, you know, then you sit there and think about it, it's like, yeah, if you're 20, yeah, I mean, that's all you've heard. I mean, that's just all you've heard. And it's like, to me, that's kind of sad, because I don't mind if that stuff exists, but that it just dominates.
Well, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't us that actually made it dominant. You know, we don't own the means of production, and
yes,
you know, this was done on purpose to put.
And the ones who do went for it. I mean, Russell Simmons, you know.
Well, you know, you ask yourself, you know, how much does a black life cost? You know, how much is it worth? And like you said, I mean, you just brought up a very powerful point. And I know we're on our way out of here, but you know,
the point,
it's cool, because the point you just raised is one of the most important things I think has probably ever been said by a guest on this show. We have an entire generation of young Africans in this country who do not want to identify with Africa, who actually will argue with you that they are not black people, that they are not Africans, they are not African Americans, that they are niggers. And, you know, you really have to, you know, really look at this and say to yourself, how did this happen? And, you know, they're still blaming the victim for this. But you and I understand that, you know, we didn't have a hand in this. That, you know, we had Bea Richards and, you know, just to throw some names up, you know, Bea Richards never would have allowed this. Stage actors like Raymond St. Jacques, African, West Indian, wouldn't have allowed this. Canada Lee was working against this sort of thing. Lena Horne didn't tolerate this sort of thing. Dorothy Dandridge had to work her ass off in Hollywood to keep from getting around this. And, you know, Josephine Baker had to vamp out of here to France to get away from this. You know, Jimmy Baldwin, Richard Wright. And here it is, 2012, and you really just blew my mind right there, that we have an entire generation of young African people who do not know of anything other than nigger. But we're more worried about gays in church, you know, when they're in church anyway. You know, and you got these black ministers that have...
Did you see the Eddie Long video?
I heard about it.
Yeah, no, you should... No, Triple Threat, the one who did the soundtrack,
mm-hmm.
He came out with an Eddie Long Toontown video. Check it out on YouTube.
I'll look for it. Okay, Bill Campbell, Coontown Killing Caper. Check it out, CoontownWithAK.com. Look for him on Twitter. You'll see him. Check him out. This is The Angry Indian. You've been listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. And thanks, Bill, for coming on. Hope to speak to you again.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Okay, you good luck with your book. Okay, and in the words to, you know, we've had our threes, we lost Etta James, we've lost Don Cornelius, and now we've lost Whitney Houston, and I'm going to say this, you know, we lost them, but did we turn our back on them? And I just want y'all to think about that as you do what you do today. You know, we are letting people go and then talking about how they were too weak and couldn't handle the weight. You know, this is our family, brothers and sisters, and you know, like I said, I'm not waiting for the ovens to turn on before I realize that things are hot. You know, the tide is high and we need to wake up. So in honor of Don Cornelius, off everybody, peace, love and soul, and hope everybody can be cool and find some kind of intelligence in this mishigas out here, because it's bad. So peace to you all. Peace to Bill Campbell and yours. This is The Angry Indian. I'll speak with you soon. See ya.
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to The Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for Intelligent Aboriginal.
Answer the damn question that I've asked you. I'm not asking you about Steve Cohen. I'm not talking to you about the representative that we have right now, because you are talking to me about the fact that you're running for the 9th Congressional District and you're the person that wants to take a position. So don't tell me about Steve Cohen. Tell me, what have you done in those very same areas? That's all it asks. Don't take me to Milton. Don't take me to Cordova. Tell me, what have you done in the very heart of the 9th Congressional District? I ask you, what particular company. Since you said that you helped bring jobs to Memphis, I want to know what company. Give me a specific company that you helped bring jobs to, this, to the area in. That's what I asked you. Give me specifics.
There were some small businesses that were created around the Memphis area.
What's the name? Give me the name of one. Who supported Barack Obama?
You know what? The Republicans.
How come you can't give me a damn simple answer?
The Republicans.
Ma'am, I'm going to cut your damn mic off because, damn it, you don't know how to answer a direct question. Okay? Damn, don't be as stupid as I think you are. Okay, now I'm asking you again, do you support Barack Obama? That's a yes or no.
The Republicans do not.
Okay, now ma'am, I'm asking you a damn direct question. If you can't ask a direct question, I'm going to put your ass up out of here. I ask you a direct question. Do you, as a black woman, support Barack Obama?
Let me just share with you this. I support a person. I respect him, but I do not support his policies.
So, whose policies do you support? You support Newt Gingrich?
No.
So, if he is the Republican nominee, as many Republicans think that he may be, will you be supporting him as a Republican?
I don't know who the nominee is, but I will tell you again, the Republicans think I'm a loose cannon because they can't control because I have the interests of the 9th Congressional
District. No, you don't. Well, you ain't told me a damn thing you did in the 9th Congressional District. You ain't told me nothing you did. You want to tell me about Cordova? You want to tell
That's
me about
the 9th District.
Wait a minute. You know, I'm so sick of your stuff. Okay, and I'm about to put your ass up out of here.
That's okay.
Okay, I know it is. Because you are, look, let me tell you something. You are a token Negro that white folk have control over. You have not answered a question direct yet. I don't give a damn about your mama, your sisters, and all of those people that have lived and you grew up with. I asked you about the concerns of the 9th Congressional District. You're using words like security.
When I knock on doors and I talk to people, they are concerned about being broken into. They are concerned about not being able to walk the streets. They're concerned about the thing that's coming back and forth.
What are you going to do as a congressperson that is going to change that? What can you as a congressperson do to change that?
I will vote for legislation that is going to help the city, the municipalities, to be able to do what they need to do in order
to... What do they need to do, Ms. Bergman?
Well, first of all, they need more policemen in order to provide more security.
So you think that the crime problem in Memphis is throwing no money at it? Are you that stupid? Are you stupid enough to sit here in this studio and tell me when I look at all of the killing in the black community that we're going to throw some more damn federal dollars at it and it's going to go away? We need some more police. Do you really think that's the solution to the intercity crime problem?
I will tell you what, sir. There are people in the 9th Congressional District that I agree with that feel that is a solution to crime.
You crazy as hell. See, you want to throw money at a problem that is a people problem. It is a cultural problem until we change the mindset of people. Here you are, another one of them stupid-ass Republicans that want to throw some money at the issue. Let's go and pass a bill. Let's put some more police. I don't care how many police officers you have in the streets until we have some type of program that deals with the consciousness of people and the decision that people make that they're not going to rob and kill in the black community, then that's the only thing we're going to do. You are another bourgeoisie Negro, a token Negro that the white folk are told put Martin Luther King's picture up there. Do you know that we don't give a damn about Martin Luther King's picture being up there with you?
Well, unfortunately, there are people that I meet that do care very much, and so we have a failure to communicate, so I'm going to end this conversation.
Okay, get up and get your ass up out of here. Get your stupid ignorant ass up out of my studio. Another talking ass Negro that wants white folk to approve you. Take your stupid ass on out my damn building because I'm tired of you Negroes as being bought by white folk that's want to walk up in there. I don't need to shake your hand. Get your ass hell up out my building. Get on out my building. I'm scared because some of that whiteness might rub off on me. Get your ass up out of here. You don't need to stop and talk. Take your ass on out the door. Don't give me a song and dance when you come up in here. did not answer one question directly. Not one. Have no plan for the inner city. Not even dealing with black folk. So now you want to pass some legislation. You think that the problem in the black community is all about, damn, throwing some more money. And whoever you are, 273-5902, you can kiss my ass. I put her ass up out of here because I don't deal with BS from politicians. I'm sick of the political BS. And that's all I got. Didn't ask one question. Her ass hasn't been in the black community. I got the documentation here that shows that every dollar that she got when she ran the last time was from white folk. Ain't no black names on this. I pulled her record from the Federal Election Commission. All of these bourgeoisie Negroes, Donovan and all of that group, why would they pitch a Negro like that? Because she's a Negro that with her processed ass hair, with her curly hair, that ain't natural, that permy ass hair that she got on her head. We can speak into this Negro, and you're another Negro that we can make do what we want to do. And no, I don't have to be nice to that mess. I pulled information on this Operation Black Storm. They've named it Operation Black Storm, restructuring, rebuilding America. There is a movement by bigots and the Tea Party to take back over this country again. Damn white folk, you want to tell me about the Constitution? The Constitution of the United States at the time didn't have a damn thing to do with black folk. Not a damn thing to do with black folk. That same constitution that you fighting for white folks says that your ass, even with your curly hair out of a damn jar, that your ass was property. You was chattel. So you don't come up in my studio with that song and dance. You are a Negro that's bought and paid for the proof. Go to Operation. And I want y'all to look it up. Read it yourselves. Operation Black Storm, okay? Not Operation Storm, not Operation White Storm, but Operation Black Storm, which is paid for by the Patriot Political Action Committee, a division of the Tea Party, and she's a part of their black division. She's a part of the division that white folk in the Tea Party said, we're going to get us a nigger, we're going to get us a curly-haired nigger who we can program. She don't have to do nothing for black folk. We're going to take her ass, program her like the good slave to her ass is, and make her go out there and deceive some black folk. She can kiss my ass.
This is DJ Fusion of the Fusebox Radio Broadcast and BlackRadiosBack.com, and you're now listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, another slice of real black radio for the masses. All right, peace.
AngryIndianRadio.blogspot.com.
Radio Intelligent Aboriginal.
The broadcast that works to keep the fourth world informed. Radio Intelligente Rindigina. Internet radio for intelligent aboriginals.